Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
This podcast is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAY2WIN5 with the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome back to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
I'm Dylan.
I'm Tyler.
And this week we're talking once again about Bloomburrow. Last week we talked about all the cards that weren't multicolored lands and artifacts. This week we're talking about all the cards that are multicolored lands and artifacts from Bloomburrow for CEDH.
Yeah, we're in the same clothes.
We made sure to wear the same clothes as last week.
Yes. Yeah. This wasn't recorded at the same time.
No, this was definitely just to make sure we didn't have any kind of continuity errors or anything. Yeah.
What's the first one we're talking about today?
Right. So we're going to jump right in with our first commander option here, which is Arthur Marigold Knight. I gotta zoom in a little bit. This is going poorly so far at the start of the second podcast.
Well, if you don't bring attention to it, no one knows.
I already did. Arthur Marigold Knight is 2, a blue, a red, and a white for a legendary creature, Mouse Knight. That's a 4/5 with haste. And whenever Arthur and at least one other creature attacks, look at the top 6 cards of your library. You may put a creature card from among them onto the battlefield tapped and attacking. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order, and then return that creature to its owner's hand at the end of combat. So this is kind of like Winota and Zergo and Ojutai had a baby, and it came out as a mouse.
Yes, it is not as, like, potentially busted as Winota is. Unfortunately, Winota triggers many times. This is maximum only triggering the one time, and you bounce the thing back up in your hand. So it doesn't snowball quite as quickly.
Your opponents can also block and remove that creature as well, since it does not get indestructible the way that Winota gives.
Yeah, it's kind of a fixed Winota, a commander that already doesn't see a ton of play anymore, but it has the addition of blue, and blue is extremely powerful. Does that make it good enough? No.
It has haste, though. It doesn't have to go around.
I think having haste is pretty important.
And it's huge for a mouse. A 4/5 with haste as a mouse? Stocky.
Well, it's riding on...
Is it riding something?
What is it riding?
Can I see?
It's very difficult to tell.
It looks like it is riding an alive tree.
It's an alive piece of tree bark with legs.
Yeah, that's what it looks like it is riding.
Official position of the show. That's what it is. That is a living tree.
Yeah.
All right. What were we saying?
Well, that's flavorful.
Yeah, I mean, it's just doing the collected company thing, right? Look at six, put a creature onto the battlefield. If you have great ETBs, maybe this is, like, worth it, but it definitely requires you to, like, build the deck around the effect, which means you're probably running, like, some bad cards. You can't just run, like, a good stuff pile or something like this. And unlike Winota, because that thing has to be tapped and attacking and it doesn't gain indestructible, you can't really run like a bunch of small stacks creatures because they're not going to stick around anyway, even if they don't get blocked to death, because they bounce at the end of turn. It doesn't have like the surprise you're under stacks now element of Winota.
The only good creatures I can see you actually wanting to get off of this in this color combination are going to be Imperial Recruiter, Recruiter of the Guard, and Spellseeker. And other than that, all the other creatures that you want in this color combination, you kind of want them play because they're all going to be like card advantage engines, really. Draenith Magistrate or something like that.
Yeah, basically this allows you to kind of reuse like the tutor creatures like that. When you mentioned Dockside and stuff like that, I agree overall. It doesn't explode enough. It just offers like some card advantage, which is nice and helpful, but there's probably better options.
And it's this and at least one other creature too. Yeah. So you also like have to be set up to be able to attack with another creature, which historically Jeskai decks aren't trying to do. So I think you're just powering down your Narset deck or something else if you're trying to go in this direction, I think.
I don't remember what I gave the owl that gives everything -1/-1 toughness, but I give this about that. I think you give it a 1.5.
I'm going to also give it an owl as well.
Yeah, I'll give it one owl.
I think this is a little bit better than the owl. So this is like 1.1 owls.
1.1 owls. Okay, I could see 1.1 owls, sure.
1.1 owls. Yeah, owl, and owl, and then
do you remember
times
how
1.1.
Last episode we talked about the rating system? We locked it in. We kept it. There was no more than one decimal point. It was beautiful. And now we're off the rails already.
We're rating all these animals based on other Bloomburrow animals.
Okay, yeah. I would say 1.1 to 1.2 owls for this one.
Yeah, me too. All right, let's talk about then Balin the Haymaker. This is a red, a green, and a white for a 4/3 legendary rabbit warrior. You can tap two untapped tokens you control to add a mana of any color. You can tap three untapped tokens you control to draw a card. And you can tap four untapped tokens you control to put three +1/+1 counters and really make Balin a haymaker. It will then gain trample at the end of turn.
I think this is a Dockside outlet that you can win with the Collector Oof in play if your Dockside makes enough.
That is absolutely correct.
I don't know what that number is.
You need to be able to bounce the Dockside though, right?
Yeah, with like a Team or Sabertooth, you bounce the Dockside. And then you, like, if you made eight treasures, you can tap eight of them for four mana and then recast the Dockside and do it again.
So it has the advantage of being able to win through some things.
Through Collector Oof, yeah.
I think it's also worth pointing out that with Academy Manufacturer, this card gets a lot better.
Very true.
Because then you're immediately making three tokens every time you make one token. So it definitely has some interesting text and does some interesting things. It has draw on the command. But I don't think it's an outlet that just wins the game. You have to assemble a Dockside loop anyway, and then that combos off with just about anything else. So to your point, it can win through Collector Oof, Null Rot effects, that kind of thing. But I think that's the only advantage, and that might not be enough to be stuck in these colors.
Yeah. For me, one of the main things that Naya has like access to is really good artifact hate. Like, you want to play Stony Silence, Collector Oof, Null Rot, all that stuff, but you kind of can't because Dockside is also a big one of your strengths. So I kind of like this, that this allows you to play into the strengths of Naya while also keeping the strengths of just like a powerful CDH card. I agree. Overall, I'm playing Tim Natana over this. I'm playing a four color pile of good stuff that will win in some type of creature-based way over something like this, but I do see the appeal of it. To me, it's like a two. You know, it might see a little bit of play, but it competes with a lot of other Naya decks that are doing similar stuff, Jetmir and things like that.
Even outside of this color combination, I'd rather be in Marnius if I want to play a token-based deck. I'm just in better colors, and I have a more reliable outlet for infinite mana.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little bit too niche, I think, to the benefit isn't just quite, it's not good enough.
Amazing casual card, but I too think it's just going to be a two, because I think a lot of the stuff you want in the other Naya decks, the other Naya commanders are doing it better.
Two owls, by the way. Yeah, two owls.
Yeah, no, specifically
that's how good this
owls.
Is. Two
yeah.
owls.
All right, let's talk about Flubs the Fool. This is a red, a blue, and a green. I read that in the backwards order. For a legendary Frog Scout, it's a 0/5, and it says you may play an additional land on each of your turns. Whenever you play a land or cast a spell, draw a card if you have no cards in your hand. Otherwise, discard a card. We need to thank Ken Bauman for showing us the deck that we play on the channel for this.
Yeah, we haven't played this one yet. We will be playing it soon, I think 2 days from now. I think this seems super interesting. The potential seems crazy high, but it's certainly a workaround. I'm not sure that it's going to be good enough. What are your thoughts?
I want to start by saying I'm delighted there's a card that finally just tells you, yeah, go ahead and crack that LED right away.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
I think that's cute. But yeah, it asks you to be hellbent, which kind of isn't good, but the effect is pretty powerful, right? Drawing a card when you have no cards on hand, like, you know, if you're kind of going for a manual storm sort of thing, this is a really, really great effect to have on the battlefield. Additional land each turn is weird because in CDH, the land count is usually so low that that's not a primary way you're getting access to mana. So this might want to run a much higher land count than usual. So it's definitely, I don't think you can just take a shell of another CEDH deck and like make this work. But I think it's viable. I think the text is strong enough.
It's its own thing in the metagame. Like, you're exactly right. Like, it's not going to do what like your Polymorph, Rog, Thrasios decks are going to do. It's not going to do what your other like red Thrasios decks are going to do. What this does is it runs every single zero mana creature that it possibly can and basically tries to use its commander as a Song of Creation. I know what you were saying about lands is true, but you still only need to run a very small amount of lands in the deck because you have so many free things that you're able to cast that it's still pretty easy to find like your second mana source through your lands.
Yeah, and I think just allowing you to get one extra land out of your hand is going to be what you're looking for. It's just like you want to go hellbent as quickly as possible. So if you have two lands, that's fine. I don't think you want to be in a situation where you could potentially have three or four lands in your hand because you still only want ever two lands in your hand because you want to play them both, right?
Exactly. Yeah. This deck does not play Force of Will. It does not play really any on the stack interaction. Doesn't really play any on the board interaction.
It's all gas.
It doesn't play any card advantage. There is no Rhystic Study. There is no Mystic Remora.
You just concede to Dranith Magistrate, basically.
That's basically it, yes. But you try to get this thing out on turn one or turn two so that you can basically win the game as fast as possible after that. If not the turn that you've cast him, then the next turn.
Yeah, and are we finishing on Underworld Breach? Is that what the end condition was?
You could
was?
Do You'd Underworld assume, right? Breach. There's also a Thoracle, too.
There's a Thoracle, okay. So you just, like, draw through your whole deck manually, basically.
You'll find Mana Rocks or maybe your second land then at that point that you can use to actually win the game.
Interesting, interesting. Can I read it one more time?
Yeah. Yeah, take his phone.
So it, like, actively feeds itself, which I think is super interesting, too.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, you get to a point where you can be Hellbent pretty quickly. It's super weird. It's going to play different than a lot of other CDH decks, but I think it's almost something. I'm going to give it, like, a 2.5 because I think the ceiling's high.
I think the ceiling's high, too. I mean, it's definitely reminiscent of Nadu, where it's, like, a deck that has to run all sorts of weird cards, and it's just all in on its own strategy. So I'm going to give it 0.5
Nadus. 0.5 Nadus, okay.
0.5 Nadus, yeah.
2.5 Seagulls for me.
The problem is that it doesn't get to play any of the cards that I am excited to play in this color combination that I know are good in CEDH. Like Rhystic Study and Mystic Remora and
you
stuff
could play
like
those
that.
Cards in this deck, though.
They are actively horrible, because if you draw them while you're trying to combo off and you don't have the mana form, like, they're not helping progress you through the rest of your deck at that point. Like,
it's kind of got to be all gas or the plan doesn't work, basically, right?
Exactly, right? Yeah. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun to do. It's not going to be the first deck that I'm going to want to put together for years to come after this, but it seems like a lot of fun. I think I'm going to give it about 1.5 chickens.
Okay, I like that. I also like that the art is a reference to the tarot card. I think that's pretty cool. It's like a pretty, you'll find the side by side on the internet
it
if
is,
you want
yeah,
the full.
Yeah.
It's like the same position. I think that's cool. That's an aside. But yeah, card is sweet. Some amount of birds is the rating we give it.
So next, let's talk about Helga, Skittish Seer. This is a green, a blue, and a white for a legendary frog druid that's a 1/3. Whenever you cast a creature spell with mana value 4 or greater, you draw a card, gain a life, and put a +1/+1 counter on Helga. Then you can tap him to make X mana of any color, where X is Helga's power. Spend this mana only to cast creature spells with mana value 4 or greater, or creatures with X in their cost.
This is a Bant Food Chain outlet with Mistel Griffin and Food Chain. This will allow you to draw through your whole deck. That's pretty neat.
Yeah.
This also wins with Ancestral Statue and the enchantment that untaps everything whenever you play a creature.
Intruder Alarm.
Intruder Alarm. Once you've gotten your commander to have enough counters, you can untap it and re-tap it to cast mana, spend mana on the Ancient Statue.
Yes.
Call it right over and over again. You can win that way. There's another blue creature that does something similar. It says whenever a creature enters, you can untap a creature. That also helps. I forget what it is.
It's a 5 mana illusion dog. Yeah. That's not good.
Right. Yeah. So there's a couple different ways you can win the game with this one, but I think the actual, like, engine power, not good. I don't really think it's really, you can consider it as like mana or card. It's really kind of just an outlet to draw your deck with those two combos. The other parts, it's not actually going
to
do much.
No, like, you still need Finale of Devastation to win the game after you make infinite mana with Helga.
I put Thassa's Oracle in. I normally don't put Thassa's Oracle in decks that don't have Demonic Consultation and Taint Pact. This one in particular, I thought it was fine because of Food Chain specifically.
Yeah, like, you can't Finale of Devastation with all that Food Chain mana that you have.
Exactly. Like, yeah, I could spend, you know, make mana with artifacts and stuff like that, but I felt like it was like important to just have a simple way to win the game.
Make mana with artifacts to cast Thassa's Oracle.
Right. Yeah, that also does it. But yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, if we're using a real rating scale, I think this is like a 2.5, probably more like a 2.
2.5 what?
Let's see, the mouse was 1.1 owls, but I think this is probably better than the mouse. So I'm going to say this is like 1.5 mice.
1.5 mice. Okay, I can see that. I think this is somewhere around like a 2.4. I think if you're going to play this, you should play Atraxa instead. Really?
Yeah.
Realistically, if you're going to take something like this to a tournament, you should just play Atraxa.
And just put more good cards in your deck.
And put more good cards in your deck. But if you want to be fun, you like this commander, this can work as a CDH commander. I think you can get a chunk of games for sure.
Watch us, like, the gameplay video at this point would have already been posted, so watch like
watch this one dominate
absolutely whipped by this card. Yeah. Our next card is Hugs Grizzly Guardian. This is X, 2 red and 2 green for a legendary badger warrior that's a 5/5 with trample. And when Hugs enters, exile the top X cards of your library. Until the end of your next turn, you may play those cards. You may play an additional land on each of your turns.
This is another one that's a Dockside Infinite Mana outlet. It's also a Food Chain outlet. This is probably worse than a Tali, but similar to a Tali. If you copy and paste a Tali and change five cards, you can make a deck for this commander, and I think it'd be pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, just to clarify, I think it's not probably worse than a Tali. I think it is overtly and obviously substantially worse than a Tali.
Yeah, for sure.
You get to control it a little bit more, which is nice. At 7 mana, this will exile 3 of your own things, and 7 mana... A Tali will exile 3 of your opponent's things as well as one of your own things.
Yeah, and weirdly enough, a Tali is the only case where you would rather flip into your opponent's stuff than your own stuff here.
Yeah, you can also cast them for free with a Tali. With a Tali, you can cast it for free. Not with this one.
Oh, I was like, what did I say on hugs?
No, what happened? No.
But you have to do them right then and there. Like this, you can time stuff out a little bit differently with hugs.
Is this until your, when is this until?
Until the end of your next turn.
Until the end of your next turn, not your next end step. The end of your next turn. So you do it now, you can untap, wait your next turn.
That's what I mean when you have a little bit more control over it. That's what I mean.
I mean, I think if you were going to do that, you do it now and make sure you have enough mana up to cast a Final Fortune.
Yeah, maybe. But this is going to cost like 7 mana to cast if you want to do it for like X's 3. And it's hard to hold up more mana than that.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to want to leave up more mana after this.
This card sucks.
Yeah, this card's overall, I think, probably not good. It just looks like a CDH card. Overall, I think it's like a 1.7.
It just doesn't do enough is all that it is. It's a little bit too slow. And yeah. It just doesn't do enough.
It does fit our... It doesn't even, because I feel like when we talk about what is it required to be a CDH card, we talk about that being an outlet, which is what this is. We talk about mana advantage, which this technically is. And we talk about card advantage, mana advantage and card advantage, which this also technically is. So it is 3 out of the 5 things.
It's bad. Really bad on all 3 of those accounts, though, is my problem with
it. Yep, I agree.
A 1.7, you said?
I think a 1.7 is what I said.
We'll give it that.
I'm giving this a 1.4.
1.4, okay.
Great. That sounds great. Castrol, the Wind Crest, is 3, a blue and a white for a 4/5 legendary bird scout. It has flying, and whenever one or more birds you control deal combat damage to a player, choose one. You may put a bird creature card from your hand or graveyard onto the battlefield with a finality counter on it. You could put a +1/+1 counter on each bird you control, or you could draw a card.
This one, and we can breeze past it quickly because it's not good right now. But this is a card that I just want to bookmark because if we ever get enough like really good birds, this commander is insane. Like the stuff that it does is so crazy. Birds just aren't good. There's not enough good birds to make it good.
Yeah, birds aren't real.
Birds aren't real, exactly. So if we ever go to a set that's like a bird set and we get like 10 awesome birds, this card is for sure a maybe.
Wouldn't that have been Bird this Burrow. Set, though?
This would have been the set, yeah.
There is a whole faction of blue-white birds.
And none of them are good.
All right, so when we come back to Bloomburrow in 10 years...
Bird Burrow.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think this is like a 0.5 right now. It's 0.5. But the effect is nutty. In a casual bird deck, insanely strong.
Oh, yeah. Casual birds. New Turgrid to look out for.
If you play that card that says all creatures are the creature type that you name everywhere, you name
Maxwood
Bird.
Maxwood
Nexus. This Whoa. Is great with that.
You know, we talked about that card a lot for the Assassin's Creed set, so right. maybe this is a reason.
Maybe
okay.
We give it a 1. Maybe this card's a 1. Effect's good. There's just not enough support for it yet.
All right, yeah, 1. Lily Splash Mentor is definitely not a 1. This is 2, a green and a blue for a 4/4 Frog Druid with Reach. For a green, a blue, and a colorless, or a generic, whatever you want to call it, exile another target creature you control, then return it to the battlefield under its owner's control with a +1/+1 counter on it, activated only at sorcery speed.
How many times are we going to talk about Dockside Extortionist in all of these sets? This works great with Dockside Extortionist. It is another card that, like the Unicorn and like the Cat.
Teamer Sabertooth and Emile.
This card does the same thing. If your Dockside makes 4 treasures, this can go infinite by bouncing it back and forth. If you're in white, you play Emile before this every single time.
Because the only downside is the activate only as a sorcery.
Right. Teamer Sabertooth can do it instant speed, which is kind of nice. Sometimes it can save your things. You can respond to stuff, right? Teamer Sabertooth is an instant speed.
Yes, because... A lot of times that does happen where someone will go, oh, I have Lightning Bolt for your Dockside Extortionist. You go, I'll still have extra mana and I can respond. Emile also lets you do that. That's really the biggest downside with this card, I think.
Baron Master Wizard also lets you do that, but you have to sacrifice a permanent, so it's a little bit, you need more treasures to do it. This one, you only need to make 4, whereas Teamer Sabertooth, it needs to make 5, right?
Correct, yeah. So it's a little bit less of a threshold that you need.
It's a blue card that you can pitch to Force of Will.
So it just makes it better than Teamer Sabertooth in Rug Thrasios decks, I would say.
Better than equal to, maybe. I think it's close.
I think not being able to do it at instant speed is a pretty big deal.
Yeah, that is a little bit of a stinker.
Oh, I definitely agree with that.
A little bit of a stinker. But I do think this is like firmly a CDH card. I think it's in contention with those other loops, things that go with Dockside. I'm going to rate this like a 3.9. I do think it'll see play in good CDH decks.
I'm giving this like a 3. I think you're a little too high on it just because it's 7 to get it going.
I'm
going
to do a 3.45 to kind of be in the middle of both of you there. Just because I don't think this is really going to replace a lot of the Dockside enablers or combo pieces that we're already playing. I would rather play like more Docksides if I'm looking for more combo pieces than more copies of a 4-mana like clunkier creature that is only being used as a combo piece.
But more Docksides don't exist.
Sticker Goblin is arguably another Dockside that could really go infinite with a meal if I need it to, if it's making me enough mana with stickers.
You'd really rather play Sticker Goblin than this card?
I would rather play more copies of effects like Dockside than more copies of effects like this. Like, I don't need more Emiles in my decks. I only need the one Emil. I would much rather have more things that can push me to help me win the game more.
Sticker Goblin won't work with this one either because this is a blue and a green and it's pip cost, which
is
irrelevant.
That's why I don't want this either. If I'm playing a deck that can play Sticker Goblin, like Emil is something I want significantly more because of the generic cost.
I would never play Sticker Goblin, and I might play this card, but I understand what you're saying.
I bring up Sticker Goblin, and I know you can't play this card in Atali, but Sticker Goblin is something that will go infinite with like Cloudstone Curio loops in Atali, which is why like it is a contender for something that can make you infinite mana with these same kind of loops.
Yeah, I agree. It's in the same camp that those other three cards are, Baron Master Wizard, Teemer Sabertooth, and Emil, but I think it is a notch worse than all of them.
I agree, yeah.
Okay.
Cool. Let's talk about Mr. Foxglove next. This is 2, a green, a white, and a blue for a legendary fox rogue. He's a 3/5, and he has got lifelink. Whenever Mr. Foxglove attacks, draw cards equal to the number of cards in defending player's hand minus the number of cards in your hand. If you didn't draw cards this way, you may put a creature card from your hand onto the battlefield. I thought for a second it was going to be like, oh, I have to put a negative number of cards? Like,
no, it's upside. If you don't do the first part, there's
still
more
upside.
Upside.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And you can choose not to, right? You can choose not to do the first part?
No, you have to. Yeah. So you have to only control it by attacking a player that has fewer cards than you.
So if you attack a player with
More cards than you.
No, if you attack a player with more cards than you, then you will draw. But if you want to put a creature,
you don't get to choose. Yeah, you have to attack the right player.
You get to choose by attacking the right player.
Yes, okay. I think this card is similar to Xyrus, but maybe a more controllable version. And now, it doesn't do what Xyrus does with the snakes and whatnot, but it draws you, like, I think on average, this will probably draw you 3 cards every time it attacks. If you can get down to 3 cards, you can pretty much guarantee that an opponent will have 6, at least one of them, and I think that's a really great rate.
If Jessica's Will's good, then this card could be good at drawing you cards.
That is a great rate, but it doesn't have haste.
Yeah.
And this is a big deal.
It's a 5 mana.
A 5 mana creature that doesn't have haste. It's a 3/5, so it's at least got a big enough pot that it's probably able to survive combats, but you're not going to be able to attack into just anyone. You'll get at least one trigger, because it is an attacks trigger, not a damage trigger. But even so, I think it's so telegraphed that, like, I think your opponents, you know, if they're going to have time to discuss how to get cards out of their hand so that you're not able to do anything except cheat a creature out. So, and you really don't want to fill your hand with, like, huge creatures that you can't play just on the hope of getting them out. So the fact that your opponents have time to react to it and talk about how to respond to it, try and clear their hand to some extent, like, I just don't think smart opponents are going to let you get away with turning this into a fantastic engine.
Yeah, that might be true. I think I'm looking at it like the ceiling is super high. If you can go hellbent and attack someone with 7 cards in their hand and draw for 7, holy shit, is that good? But that's just not going
to
come up very often.
You're in bad colors to try to go hellbent, unfortunately.
You kind of have to lean into like more permanent-based things, but the permanents that you want to play are like Rhystic Studies that will draw you more cards, so
I think he's a 0, honestly.
Zero.
I don't think Mr. Foxglove is going to see any CEDH play.
Okay.
I don't think it's the worst one we've talked about at all. I'm still going to give it like a 1.5.
I think it's same level we talked about, like the Owl and the Jeskai Mouse. I think this is around the same level of like, these cards are going to be very powerful in high power casual, but are going to be like just weak enough to not be great in CDH. So I'm going to give this one like a 1.5.
Everything else that we talked about, like at least has combos or something that's like good with it.
Yeah.
This is just it on its own. And
this
doesn't
is just
really
advantage.
Yeah. And I feel like if you are trying to put a creature into play, your Bant color combination is not the color combination you really want to be in, because this is like the poor man's Kinnan at that point.
I think I'm much more interested in the draw than I am in the creature. I kind of wasn't even thinking about the put the creature into play part. I don't think that's going to come up. I'm always going to want to draw cards. But I still agree, a 5-mana thing you have to play, untap, and attack with, and then all it does is draw you a couple cards. Like, Xur wins you the game if you untap with it and attack with it. So I see what you mean, but I still think it's got some ceiling. I'm going to say 1.5. Sticking to it.
Let's talk about Stormcatch Mentor. This is a blue and a red for an Otter Wizard. That's a 1-1. It's got haste and prowess, and it says instant and sorcery spells you cast cost one less to cast. Move over, Goblin Electromancer.
Card that didn't really see play before.
Was that not seen play?
No, not a ton.
All right, this is a 0.
I think this one's bad. I don't think this one's great.
This might be a flat zero.
Karga Sakashima is the only thing that I see wanting this, and I don't think it does.
And if they're not playing Goblin Electromancer, then they don't want this.
If they're not playing Baral Chief of Compliance, they don't want this.
It's instant or sorcery. It's not non-creature.
It's just instant or sorcery, yeah.
0.
Oh, shit. This is a lot worse than I thought. The Infamous Cruel Claw is 1, a black and a red for a legendary Weasel Mercenary. It's a 3-3 with menace, and whenever it deals combat damage to a player, exile cards from the top of your library until you exile a non-land card. You may cast that card by discarding a card rather than paying its mana cost.
I think this has some ceiling.
Here's one that also has to attack and also doesn't have haste, but there's a couple key differences here. This has menace, and it's talking about casting free spells instead of drawing cards, which is also another form of card advantage, sort of, but free spells are very good.
It's also a lot cheaper than all of the other creatures that we've talked about that require you to attack.
I'm really liking this with like Imperial Seal, Vampiric Tutor, putting like a Peer into the Abyss on top of your library and just using this to cast it right away. That's really great, obviously.
I want to see this with Seize the Day that we put in this deck and see if we can like get a couple of different cards instead.
Yeah, this is one that we're playing for the upcoming episode. We're playing the commanders from the set. It's also a great reanimator strategy. I'm doing Hoarding Broodlord stuff with this one because you can discard a card. Now, if you hit a reanimation spell off of the ability, you can't discard a card and reanimate that card with the ability, because as part of casting a spell, you announce your targets before you pay the costs. So you won't be able to do that, but you can set it up in a couple turns. You can discard something now and then next turn reanimate it, or discard it to cast the, you go into a Dockside Extortionist, discard this to cast the Dockside, and then from your hand, you have the reanimation spell or something like that.
It just sets you up to be able to put yourself in great positions.
Yeah, so this one, way stronger, and I think this is probably a 3.
I think this is also a 3. I think this could be a deck. I see it very similar to the Vampire, the Black-Red Vampire.
Florian,
which has seen some tournament play. I think this is a similar card to that.
It being a May is also very helpful, too, that like you're not forced to get rid of a card to play something that's disadvantageous for you right now.
Right. And it's a guaranteed hit, which is nice. Unlike the mouse, the Jeskai mouse, you can whiff on the Jeskai mouse. This one, you go until you hit the spell, so you're always going to hit something.
Cool.
I think a 3 is right.
3-ish.
Our next card is Vren the Relentless. This is 2, a blue and a black for a legendary rat rogue. It's a 3-4 with ward 2. If a creature an opponent controls would die, exile it instead. That's pretty cool. At the beginning of each end step, create X 1-1 black rat creature tokens with this creature gets +1/+1 for each other rat you control, where X is the number of creatures your opponents controlled that were exiled this turn.
This is an army in a can in Dimir colors as a commander. It's kind of like a haymaker if we were to like talk about like what role it would fill as a commander. I think it's pretty easy to just fill your decks full with removal spells. And since your commander exiles them as they die, just kill stuff on everyone's turn and make a whole bunch of rats that'll get basically exponentially bigger, and you can kill your opponents with those.
Ooh, what's a Force of Despair? Like an instant speed wrath on things that enter the battlefield this way. So like ways that you can break parity on mass removal, I think would make this pretty decent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Except that it's like Najeela in two colors without the good cards. Like, I don't...
You have the important combo, Thassa's Oracle, Demonic Consultation.
Yeah, that's true. I think the fact that this makes, like, the army, like, the things get big, like, over time quickly. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you can make an army, like, if you make 2 a turn, how do you make the rats?
X, where X is the number of creatures your opponents controlled that were exiled this turn.
So it's really hard to make, like, 1 a turn. That would be, like, kind of a lot. If you killed someone, everyone's thing. So that's 1, 2, 3 rats, and then on your turn also, they get +1 for each other rat you control. So like by themselves, the damage output I think is a little bit more. That's not even true with Najeela, because the Najeela grows so exponentially over
turns. I don't think Najeela is a fair card to compare this to, because the deck doesn't look like Najeela at all. Even though the commander's making 1-1s, this is a majorly control deck instead, where you're playing the 1 mana each player sacrifices as a creature card, where in that way you trade off one rat for three more rats in that case, right? So like it's a slow, grindy advantage kind of deck that is going to be probably more akin to a worse Talion
or
than
Nimrist. Yeah, Talion, yeah, exactly.
As opposed to a Nigella. I think that's an unfair comparison.
But against creature heavy decks, this definitely like can kill someone pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Like all it, you know, all it takes is like one Massacre Worm or something.
Yes.
And then you're really in business. You're going to have a lot of rats. They're all going to be big.
Yeah.
Except for him.
Yeah. Not making exclusively 1/1s. Like the fact that they get massive, I think also like really helps push the clock up a little bit faster than maybe we're thinking.
Yep. I think I kind of rate this one as like a 2.5, which might be a little bit higher than it even deserves. But I think just being in Dimir and being in a strategy that we haven't quite seen like this at this rate, like this army to can, it's something that I'm very interested in. We don't really have quite yet. So I want to see it. I have high potential of it, but I'm willing to be very wrong about
2.5. It's like a weird Nath, I would say.
Yeah.
A weird Nath.
But in just way better colors.
Yeah. So maybe even a better Nath.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll say 2.5.
2.5-ish.
Yeah. All right, 2.5. That sounds great. The next one is Zinnia Valley's Voice. This is a blue, a red, and a white for a 1/3 bird bard that has flying. Zinnia Valley's Voice gets +X/+0, where X is the number of other creatures you control with base power 1, and creature spells you cast have Osperine 2. That's pretty cool. You can basically double your dockside that way.
Everything is a Kangaskhan.
Everything's a Kangaskhan,
everything
yeah.
Everything is can, Kangaskhan,
everything's
yeah.
A drum.
Everything's a drum.
Everything's a drum. Everything's a drum.
Doubling dockside's great.
Yep.
Doubling Gilded Drake, great.
Oh, yeah.
Doubling the recruiters, both great when you have combos that you can find two cards with the recruiters and win the game off of.
I did put Kiki Jiki, Mirror Breaker, and Pestermite in this deck because if you can Offspring one of those recruiters, each of them can find each of those cards that way.
Spellseeker also probably great.
Spellseeker also great.
Big yeah.
Time. Yeah. There's some things. Are you, you're not playing anything like Young Pyromancer or anything that generates a bunch of 1/1s so that this can get extra huge? I feel like that's not great.
No, I'm not really playing into that aspect of Zinnia. I think that kind of isn't the direction you want to go. It's more so like making sure that like the creatures that I have are going to be good. Like having two Archivist of Agmas seems pretty good. Just like trying to get more value out of value pieces as opposed to something like Young Pyromancer instead.
So I think the effect is really powerful, but it's worth mentioning that to see the first benefit from it, you have to invest 2 for the offspring cost and 1 of each pip to get this down, and then the original mana cost of the creature. So like the getting rolling part is kind of hard. So I think that makes this a commander that like if it gets removed once, you're kind of dead in the water.
Yes.
I think it's very all in on the one strategy it's doing. But again, a very powerful effect. You know, it's mana hungry, but as long as you keep a hand that can make a lot of mana, probably in great shape.
Well, it also has the whole backup of like Intuition, Underworld Breach, Lion's Eye Diamond, Savine's Reclamation. So like you do still have things that you can do even without your commander, but I totally see where you're going with that.
And you don't have to play that many dead cards either. Or when I say dead cards, like all of the cards that you're playing that work well with this, like I mentioned, Gilded Drake, the recruiters, those are still like good cards. Like those are fine cards. You're not playing like weird random shit that's completely dead without your commander. Like your cards still do any stuff. You just like get to turbo blue farm your stuff while we're getting like way more value.
And like honestly, the deck does not look very different from a lot of other Jeskai builds because you are really just only getting like minimal amounts of value out of that. There's not really like a ton of creatures that you want to offspring, but
did the offspring, does it come in at the exact same time as the creature or does it come in first or second? I'm thinking about like the evolve guy that we talked about earlier.
So you pay the 2 as you cast the spell. And if you do, when that creature enters, then it makes a...
So the creature enters first and then the token comes after.
It's almost like you're giving that creature the enter the battlefield trigger.
Okay, so the 1/1 that you make won't trigger the evolve on your 1/2 card draw engine that we talked about in the last episode.
No, because it's smaller, but otherwise it would.
It's smaller, but otherwise it would. Yes, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so I think I'm going to rate this the same as the last guy. I think this is also 2.5 to me for different reasons.
Yeah, I think so too. Around a 2.5. Ailsa is probably better in Jeskai colors, but I'm interested. This does something that is cool.
I would wager that the 4-mana Narset is probably also better than this in Jeskai colors. I just like what that does to get you card advantage a little bit more than this. But if you are looking to go the combat route, you want to play Kiki Jiki in your Jeskai deck, I think this is a pretty cool way to go.
Yep, definitely.
Cool. Our next card is Zoraline, Cosmos Caller. This is a white, a black, and a generic mana for a 3/3 legendary bat cleric. It has flying and vigilance, and whenever a bat you control attacks, you gain a life. And whenever Zoraline enters or attacks, you can pay a black and a white and two life. When you do, return target non-land permanent card with mana value 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield with a finality counter on it.
This is like Luris, kind of.
Yeah, I was just going to say, this is just Luris, except worse.
Like, except a little bit worse?
I think it's worse.
Yeah, the black-white is different than the generic.
I think you could literally just have Luris in the command zone and it would be better than this.
This is flying and vigilance, which is not nothing.
It's close to nothing.
Close to nothing, but it's not nothing.
It's not nothing.
But I think it's similar in power on Luris. If you want to play Luris, you want more copies of Luris in the 99, this is maybe something else you can go to as a commander. Orzhov just doesn't offer enough that I'm interested in most often, I think. But if you're interested in more Luris effects, your commander is really doing like Sun Titan shit. I kind of like this as like Sun Titan in the command zone. You know, that's kind of
yeah,
nice.
I could see that. I saw people on Twitter saying that this was a blue farm card, which to me is a little bit ludicrous. I don't have space in any blue farm deck of mine to put this in.
I don't think that's real.
I'm not seeing it either, personally. It is a non-land permanent card with 3 or less. Like, this is good, but it has to hit the battlefield or attack, right?
So you have to have 5 mana up when you cast it, more or less, to get the effect.
If you want to reanimate something,
I mean, yeah. Just run Luris. I'm still not understanding that piece.
Yeah, run Luris.
And I don't even like Luris that much. I'm going to give this card a 1.
Yeah, I think it's around a 1 for me, too. Maybe 1.5.
Maybe a 1.5, yeah.
Yeah, I have to give it one owl because I regret giving that owl a 1.5, yeah. But I should have given it a 1, but so I'll give it one owl.
I'll give it 1.5, but specifically a barn owl.
Oh, okay.
Barn owl, yeah.
I'm going to give it a 1.
Moving on.
I don't know another owl. Yeah, okay.
A 1.
Who cooks for you?
Just a 1. All right, here we go. We got 2 Magda cards to talk about real quick. In Barkform Harvester, which is a 3 mana artifact creature shapeshifter. That's a 2/3 with changeling reach. And for 2 mana, you can put target card from your graveyard on the bottom of your library. And then 3 Tree Mascot is a 2 mana changeling shapeshifter. That's a 2/1. That's hard to say. That also, for 1 mana, lets you add 1 mana of any color, but you can only activate it once each turn.
Why are we doing them both at the same time?
They're the same thing, yeah. It's a 2 mana artifact dwarf and a 3 mana artifact dwarf. The 2 mana artifact dwarf, 3 Tree Mascot, I think for certain is going to go in Magda because it's just better than the 3 mana ones that they were playing. But you're already playing a couple 3 mana artifact dwarfs that aren't really great in the deck, and if we're getting upgrades, I kind of would rather swap out artifact dwarves before I'm adding in worse dwarves into my deck at that point.
Do you think it's also relevant that this one can, like, if they were somehow get rid of one of your combo pieces, you can tuck it back to the bottom of your library and then with Magda search for it again? That 3 mana one, like, that might come up sometimes?
I guess that could.
That's not huge. That's not a huge part of it, but it is a nice option.
There's other lines that you run in Magda that you just go get back instead, right? So I guess if I'm really worried about clock and I want another way to deal with clock, that is kind of the thing, because like Buried Ruin isn't that good.
Yeah, it seems like Magda is a deck that really thrives off of like redundancy. Since you don't have a ton of tutors, you kind of want like a lot of pieces that do kind of similar shit. So I think for that reason, Magda is looking for something like this.
I could see that. Yeah, it definitely wants a 2-mana one. I could see it potentially playing the 3-mana one. I've heard mixed things about the 3-mana one just because there's even other 3-mana artifact dwarves that they're already not playing. So I don't know.
That upside has to be really worth it.
It has to be really worth it. And it might just be too expensive.
Well, you know what other deck it goes in? Grenzo.
Grenzo. It sure does go in Grenzo.
Yeah, slam dunking Grenzo.
The 2-mana one, I give it a solid 3. The 3-mana one, I give it a solid 2.2525 repeating.
I think that's perfect. 2.5, 2.5, 2.5, 1 is what I'll give it, though.
We got so far without you guys doing that. All right. I'm giving the 3-mana one a 2 and the 2-mana one a 3.
I love it.
Great. Okay. And then our last card then is 3 Tree City. This is a legendary land that, as it enters, you choose a creature type. You tap it for a colorless mana, but for 2 mana and tapping it, you can choose a color and add an amount of mana of that color equal to the number of creatures you control of that chosen type.
I've seen some comparison to Gaia's Cradle. You mentioned when we were talking earlier that it's more close to a Nyx Bloom.
What is it? The Nyx...
Oh my god.
The one that adds mana based on your devotion.
Is it Shrine to Nyx?
Shrine to Nyx? Is that what the card is called? Why can't I think of it?
It is Shrine to Nyx, yeah.
Can you look it up?
This is driving me nuts, yeah.
I think it's Shrine to Nyx, but that sounds weird for some reason. It doesn't sound right.
It's Nykthos Shrine to Nyx.
Nykthos Shrine to Nyx, okay. Yeah. I've seen some comparisons to Gaia's Cradle. You mentioned earlier that it's closer to a Nykthos Shrine to Nyx than it is a Gaia's Cradle. It's a worse Nykthos. Well, I guess it depends on the deck. An Elves deck can still probably really use this card.
It's like having a second one in some decks.
Yeah, Magda might be interested in something like this. Yuriko's not gonna have enough ninjas where it matters. And
if you're
Yuriko
playing the devotion one in your monocolor deck, like, you might want this depending on what your creature scale is.
Yeah,
Other than that, yeah, like the typle stuff, kindred stuff in CEDH just is very sparse. And even then, you're normally only playing like a maximum of 10, whereas opposed to casual, like your kindred decks are going to be playing 30 of that creature type instead.
Yeah, I think so. The magic number here is 4, right? It begins adding more mana than a regular land would at 4 of whatever this creature is. And there just aren't many CEDH decks that get to a point where they have 4 of the same creature type out.
So no, I don't even think Magda wants
even
it.
Even Magda,
then. Yeah.
I don't think there's a single deck that this goes in. So I'm going to say this is a 1. But with the caveat that if we get like another better Maskwood Nexus printed or something like that, like the cards that break this and make all creatures the same type, then we're in business. But as of now, no decks are like dying for that effect.
Maybe
so.
Chatterfang.
I think also a lot of the time, like if you're in a deck like that, if you have 4 creatures out in play that are the type that you're talking about, like you're in a great position. Like this seems like a win more. You know what I mean? Like you're already in such a good spot if you're at that position. And even something like a Nigella, once you have 4 warriors, you're like normally pretty close to winning the game at that point. So making like 1 extra mana is not as helpful. So yeah, this one is probably like a 1.5 or 2, but in the right elf ball deck, maybe.
You know what might actually want it? The fucking rat we were talking about that makes a bunch of rats. Like
The rat. I could see that. A slow controlling deck that's building. Yes, that blue-black rat deck definitely plays this card, for sure.
I would say so, too. Yeah.
And that's the only one.
That's the only one. 1.5.
Nice. 1.5. Well, that's it. That's the last of the Bloomburrow cards. I didn't think of this, but we took 2 episodes to talk about all the Bloomburrow cards. Did not think that would happen.
Yeah, I think Bloomburrow has a lot of power in this set. A lot of the power, weirdly enough, I think was in the first episode where we were talking about a lot of more of the monocolored things rather than the multicolored ones. A lot of these multicolored cards are close, but not quite there, whereas the monocolored ones where I feel like we have a couple of all-stars in the set. But nonetheless, Bloomburrow is sick, and I'm really excited to see what it does to CDH. Thanks so much for watching. If you'd like to support us directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
SC Phillip, Olden Groompy, Gecko21, Caleb Ritchie, Zach Hartley, Kajo Alec, Sean in the Ice, Mark Cirillo, SoCal Acura, Stormageddon, Luke Cook, Demon of Rosgrees, Peter Stewart, Cornell Wild, Uncle Butts, Nick Foles, Godo9, Kwaja A. Hamid, Lauren Connell, and Baby G-Bus.
If you want to pick up any of our merch, you can do that at playtowinmtg.com.
Huge thank you to Dragon Shield for supporting the show. Use affiliate link playtowin5 for 5% off on our affiliate link down below.
Check out Twitter, TikTok, and Instagram at playtowinmtg.
Thanks so much for watching.
See you next time.
Goodbye.
Orjon, Mystic Muffin Man, Nick Saxby, Jacob Bauer, Reactive, Tyler Watton, Brian Barrington, Zachary Coulson, Tyler H, X Tyler the Tree X, Mallcraft, Driving Crooner, Baja, Mace the Ace, Dalton Poteet, I said Baja, not Jabaha. Crap. Hobo Ghost, Justin, Man Solo, Jacob Depp, Jan Wildfang, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson. Alright, we're gonna talk about hugs in just a second. Again, I'm really sorry.
You don't have to apologize.
I know, but I'm still going to, and I know it's really annoying, but
it's not annoying. It's more annoying, the apology.
I'll shut up about it. All right. I'll just say we're talking.
I'm giving the apology a 1.
I give the apology, yeah, a 0.5 even.
A 0.5,
the
wow.
Nose blowing, I give a 7, though. It's higher.
It's very good.
I was going to give the apology a 5 and nose blowing a 2. So
nose blowing
I'm
is a staple.
Off.
Everyone does it.
Everyone blows their nose.
Oh, I guess that's true, yeah.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.